Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Well, thank you for joining us today. Our podcast is 994 today. Can't believe I've done this 994 times. I think I've actually done it a couple more because we kind of had a couple like part ones and part twos. So we're closing in on 1,000 podcasts, which is pretty freaking awesome. I did the math recently just because I was curious, and it equated to 1,000 podcasts will equate to me talking nonstop for 21 days in a row. So for 3 weeks of my life, if I just talked nonstop, that would be the equivalent of what I've done for a podcast. So it's just pretty crazy, pretty cool. Definitely a better use of 21 days of my life than I've used in many other ways. Oh, God. So I hope that this podcast has been helpful for you. I just thought that was kind of a neat piece of information. So the topic today is training. The title is Creating Variety Without Losing Effectiveness. Often in programming, people, if you're not aware, you need to create changes in your training in order to continue to get changes from your training. So if we want to elicit, like fat loss, growth, increase in strength, if we want to create change from our body, the stimulus that we're providing our body is kind of the direction the body will go in. So if I provide a stimulus that's high endurance, my body gets better at endurance. If I apply a stimulus that requires strength to be able to perform that stimulus, our body will respond by getting stronger. So our body responds in kind to the stimulus that we provide, whether we know that or not. but it applies like changes in adaptations to become accustomed to or to be able to meet the demand. So what that means is if I go outside and I run a mile every day, my body will adapt to become better at running a mile. Not 2 miles, not 3 miles. I can't run a mile to get better at squatting. I can't run a mile, to get bigger muscles. Now, sometimes if a powerlifter strength athlete has a really horrible aerobic recovery, if they work on aerobic capacity, they can recover better in between their strength sets. All of a sudden, they can do a couple extra sets. They can do a couple extra reps. So it can indirectly help them get stronger. But aerobic capacity improvement doesn't automatically translate to strength. So what we're going through all this is if I want to continue to progress, I have to continue to improve my stimulus. If I run a mile and that's the best I can do, and my body adapts to that, and I get better cardiovascular health, I'm, feeling good, but, all of a sudden I set a goal of, running a 5K. Well, I have to actually run the 5K to get good at running a 5K, meaning I have to continue to progress past 1 mile if I want to get better than what my body did in response to get at good at running a mile. So if I lost, 30 pounds, the stimulus that I used to lose 30 pounds will not be the same stimulus that will lose me another 30 pounds. If what I did to build 10 pounds of muscle, I have to continue to build upon that stimulus to build another 10 pounds of muscle. So if people go into the gym and they do the exact same workouts, the same reps, the same sets, that will work for a little while. Your body will come accustomed to it, and then that will be the workload that maintains where you're at. It will not be the workload that progresses you even further. So you have to create variety. You have to create an increase in stimulus. So that's why people will create variety in their workouts. The problem sometimes is people create variety and it messes things up. So they'll create variety and it accidentally takes them away from the best stuff. Or the right stuff. So when wanting to create variety in their training, people will often change, like one example is they'll change whole movements. So they'll switch from like a dumbbell chest press to, maybe some kind of weird variation of something they saw a trainer do on Instagram. Unfortunately, what often happens is people change from what is kind of the good basics of things, and they chase after these quote-unquote secret exercises or the quote-unquote perfect exercise. And they end up doing a bunch of stupid things that don't actually have as much benefit as the original thing. So there's a relatively famous person on Instagram. He's a famous trainer. And he has a variety of sports athletes that he'll train. He actually trains like NFL athletes and stuff. And the stuff he does with his athletes is amazing. It's freaking awesome. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. However, he also has clients that reportedly compete in aesthetic competitions, like women's figure or a men's physique. But they're doing the same things that he has the athletes do. So, for example, he had his woman's figure competitor doing some kind of thing where she's in a half-kneeling position. Think of a bottom of a lunge. So she's in a lunge, like the bottom of a lunge position. She's balancing on some weird thing on her front foot, like a rolling device. Her back foot is on a band, and she's doing a bottoms-up kettlebell press, meaning that she's holding the handle of the kettlebell, but the bell of the kettlebell is above her hand. So think of a kettlebell being upside down. Very hard to balance that because the bell is above your hand, so it's really wobbly. She's doing it with a 10-pound kettlebell. So she's in this stupid-ass lunge position, balancing on bands in this rolling device, overhead pressing a 10-pound kettlebell, and he's saying that that's going to help her build muscle size. That is absolutely stupid. He is way outside of his realm. That's insulting to people who actually know, because you look at this and you're like, this is so dumb, my brain hurts, because you just, I think we all know that feeling where somebody says something so dumb or they do so something so dumb that your head starts to hurt, because you're trying to figure out what in the hell they thought to do this dumb thing. But since you're too smart and you can't figure it out, your brain starts to kill brain cells. That's why your brain hurts. This isn't necessarily scientific. This is just what I believe. So my head hurts to try to figure out stupid people things because I'm not stupid enough. So my brain's just killing off brain cells to try to figure it out. So I'll jokingly tell like Meredith or some other people I talk to when I'm being honest. And I'll say like, you know what? I don't even want to know that. I don't want to know what they were thinking because I would have to be as dumb as them to think that. Now, this is very judgmental probably, but whatever, we all probably think this way. So, way tangent there. But seeing stuff like that, it's just, I feel bad for the athlete because they're probably paying a shit ton of money to train with this fancy trainer. And they're absolutely getting their time wasted. So they're doing some lunge weird thing, trying to overhead press a 10-pound kettlebell. There is no way that 10 pounds will cause the sheer force damage into their shoulder to get their shoulder to grow. So this is what the person thinks it's doing, is it's going to build their bigger shoulders. So this is a overhead press variation for shoulder size, get bolder shoulders, massive delts, blah, blah, blah. It's all bullshit. There's a 10-pound kettlebell is not going to cause sheer force damage. She's not doing it for enough rep ranges to cause metabolic damage, like a pump effect. And you're not getting the stress load directly into the shoulder because she's doing so much stupid balancing shit. So it is insulting, frustrating, angering to see this stuff happen. But people do this all the time, and it drives me insane. So please, don't be one of these people. When you want to make changes to your program to create more variety, to progress your stimulus, stay with the basics. What I'm going to talk about today are some ways in which you can change the basics, but not actually have to change the base of what you're doing. So an example is clients who want to build chest size. So they need to increase their weight load and their volume. They just simply need to, some way, get the muscle to do more work and more intensity of work, more stressful work. So maybe they have a program where they're doing dumbbell chest presses. But as I said, they'll switch that out for kind of like machine flies. Or there's actually a dumbbell exercise called Around the Worlds. Very short extra tangent as well. When I taught at the university, I used to make students demonstrate exercises as a way to get like a teaching demonstration credit for ACSM accreditation purposes for the class. So they had to demonstrate an exercise in front of other students. I gave them multiple websites to take a look up different exercises. And this one girl, poor girl, she was in charge of showing a chest exercise. Well, she went on to the first site I gave. She looked at the first video link and just used that. And it was a stupid exercise called Around the World. You can think of it as if you're holding dumbbells in your hands and you're laying on a flat bench. So like how you'd have dumbbells to do like a chest press. But think of extending your arms outward like a fly. So your body, you're laying on a bench, the dumbbells are out, kind of like making your body like a T. So you're at the bottom of a chest fly. Well, what they wanted you to do is stay in that position and horizontally bring the dumbbells to your hips and horizontally take the dumbbells up over your head. Almost like you're doing a jumping jack, but you're laying on a bench with dumbbells in your hands. Absolutely stupid exercise. It's a fantastic way to destroy your shoulders. So She was reading from a paper, literally staring at the paper while she was talking to people. I do not believe that she had practiced this thing at all. I think she literally printed it off the morning before the class. So she started talking, and I interrupted her, and I said, hey, you know, you stood up, you did it in front of the class, you at least, you know, showed up today, so I'm going to give you a D, like a passing grade, but that was absolute trash. You should have practiced this, you should have given some effort whatsoever, just please move out of the way. So I showed the class what the actual exercise was, and then I explained to them for probably like 10 minutes why it was a stupid exercise and they should never do it. Okay, so this is what people will sometimes do, is they switch to things that look neat, look unique. You know, the Instagram gurus are telling you that this is the perfect thing. It's so fancy, it's so pinpointed. There's all these reasons why it's amazing when it's absolute trash and they're just trying to sell a program. So that will often happen. It's one of the biggest things that happens. Another example, though, is I had a client I've just started working with recently this past month, and he has had chronic knee pain and just overweight issues for most of his adult life. Just a lot of issues, a lot of trouble, never felt fully comfortable, would try to go to the gym before, but never worked out well, you know, all the negatives, all the bummer stuff. So we found out that he has really, really, really tight hips, and it's because his glutes are weak. He has basically no glutes. So we have to strengthen his glutes and strengthen his upper hamstrings, but we can't strengthen them until we get them to move. So we have to do some mobility work to kind of like improve range of motion, and then we can get into loaded work to improve strength. As his hips and hamstrings get stronger, his knees will actually feel better. The reason why his knees hurt is because they're actually being overworked. They're doing all the work when he's doing movements and walking around and doing stuff. So if we strengthen the glutes, the knees will get better because they'll then only have to do their normal workload rather than everybody else's workload. So we found an exercise. We have a belt squat machine that my dad made for us at our gym. It has attachments for weighted dips, weighted pull-ups. It has a bench already attached to it. It has a lot of awesome, really cool attachments. It has band attachments. All this cool stuff. All the stuff on belt squats that you see nowadays, we actually had it like freaking 8 years ago before anybody else did. So pretty neat. We're doing box squats on our belt squat, and we found that that's a great exercise for him. It challenges his hips, but it's in a challenge that he can do correctly, and it doesn't aggravate his knees. Now, we want to use that exercise because it works very well for him. He's comfortable with it. It feels good. When he has tried other things, they didn't feel good, and they hurt. And he had trouble trying to move in those pathways because his body just kind of was overprotected, overworn out. It couldn't move in those pathways. Now, if he just continues to do the belt squat, box squats, like we said, over and over and over again, he'll stop getting adaptations eventually because the body will get used to the workload. You can try to progress in reps and weight from week to week to week to week, but that eventually kind of plateaus. You know, if you try to progress in reps and or weight every single week with an exercise, if I did that from day one, I'd be doing dumbbell lateral raises with 1,000-pound dumbbells now. I've been lifting for 20 years. So eventually there is kind of a capacity that a muscle can adapt to within a rate of change, depending on like food, sleep, recovery abilities, and all these other things. So what we wanted to do was we wanted to provide other ways to increase stimulus other than just adding reps and weight. So we found that he can do a traditional box squat where you actually like sit and then stand back up out of the box. So you actually have a release of contractile tightness in your hamstrings and glutes, and then you have to recontract to come up off the box. So there's actually like kind of like your hamstrings and glutes have to resist the eccentric portion, the lowering of the squat. When you sit on the box, those muscles relax, and then you have to fire again to drive you back up. It's a double stimulus kind of like on those muscles. There's also a tapping style where he maintains constant tension. That does work the quadriceps a little bit more, but it keeps more time under tension loading for the hamstrings and glutes. So there's arguable benefits in both ways. So we started doing the box squats with both options. We also found that we have different height options we can do. So he can do a lowest setting that he can do comfortably, but that's very challenging. He can't do a lot of weight. But we can also do a higher setting, which allows him to kind of overload a little bit more weight load. And yes, it kind of misses the worst weakest spot, but as we progress above that spot, he can dip down further into it and get more and more over time. So we have sitting versus tapping, we have high seat versus low seat, and we have reverse banding options because our machine allows that capacity. So we can band from the bottom, we can band from the top, we can change our banding. We can also change the rep ranges. So he can do sets of 6 to 10 reps one day, he can do sets of 10 to 14 reps another day. They're both rep ranges that are within his goal outcome. So that gives us so many variations of just the belt squat box squats. He has belt squat box squat with sitting versus tapping. That's two options. For each of those options, he can do high versus low. So that gives us four options. For each of those options, each of those four, we can band from the bottom or band from the top. So that gives us, I think, like eight. And then he can also do no banding, but we're not using that as an option right now. And out of those eight, he can do high reps or low reps, which I think then gives us like 16. So with one movement, belt squat, box squat, we know is safe. We know is exactly what we want. It's effective. We can create 16 variations of the effective one thing that we really want. So we can create variety without losing effectiveness by understanding how to modify just the individual exercise we're doing rather than switching to brand new exercises. So what I wanted to do today at about like 17 hours into this podcast, I'll finally get to the point. So thank you for listening so far, is I want to cover ways in which you can create variety without losing the effectiveness, without losing the base of what you're doing. So the first thing, though, is if you want more results, check your nutrition, your hydration, and your sleep. It won't matter what you're doing in training. Training, what it does is it creates the stimulus for change. Your body only makes changes based on your food, your sleep, and your hydration. If you're underfed, it cannot make changes because there's no fuel to make the changes with. If you're dehydrated, the process of making changes is halted and kind of slowed down. It's not very effective. The body's kind of running slow. If you don't have sleep, the body has tons of cortisol, and it doesn't have the right environment to make those changes either. It deprioritizes those changes because it's just trying to live and survive regular day. So podcast 153 tells you how much to eat. It's titled, How Many Calories Do I Need? Podcast 310 is titled, The Importance of Hydration on Performance, and they'll tell you how much water to drink. Podcast 376 is entitled, Improving Sleep Quality, and that'll tell you how to get better sleep. You don't have to, you can't always sleep more, but how can you sleep better, okay? So those are three podcasts that will absolutely help you check your nutrition, hydration, and sleep to ensure that what you're doing in training you can actually get the most from. Now, one of the simplest ways that we can make variety within movements is just changing your grip or changing a position. So, for example, with cable seated rows, you can do a wide grip versus narrow grip. You can do overhand versus underhand versus neutral, which is your palms facing. Then there's also just different movement patterns. You can do shrugs before you do the rows. So you can do a horizontal shrug, which is great for scapular mobility and kind of lower traps, rhomboids area. Great for improving posture. So you can do like a set of, say, 6 to 10 shrugs into 6 to 10 rows, where you're getting doubling up of that midline effect along the spine to really help with the postural effects. Now, there's other options depending on like machines and availability you have, but simply just knowing that you can pick underhand, overhand, or neutral gives you three different variations of cable seated rows. And then within those, you can pretty much do a wide or a narrow. So that gives you six variations. I actually wrote a program for a client one time that gave 52 variations of dumbbell chest presses. So he trained other people out of his home gym, and all he really had was dumbbells and benches and, you know, some really basic stuff, but he trained a lot of just friends and a lot of young youth, and it was awesome. He's a super awesome guy, great person. So I wanted to help him out because he was kind of struggling with creating variety. So I gave him a paper that had 52 variations of chest presses. I've given clients that have 52 variations of leg presses. So you can create variety by changing positions. You can create variety by adding intensity techniques, things like rest pause, drop sets, run the rack. That's another way that you can add kind of like maintain the exercise you want, but add more variety to it or change the stimulus to it. If you don't know what rest pause is, you can just type intensity technique rest pause in YouTube and you'll see it. But essentially, you just do a weight for good reps of good form failure. So let's say you do a weight somewhere between 8 and 12 reps. You rest the weight, you pause for like 3 to 10 seconds depending on the largeness of the exercise. You know, squats will take a longer break than like lateral raises. So if it's a bigger movement, it takes a bigger mini break. But you would do the best you can for 8 to 12 reps. You'd rest the weight, couple deep breaths, pick it back up and keep going again. That's a rest pause. A drop set is the same concept, but you drop in weight. So you do your set of 8 to 12, and then you actually reduce the weight you load you're using by, say, 10 to 20%, and then you try to continue right away and do more reps. So intensity techniques are awesome ways to maintain the exercise you know is effective, but add more intensity, add more variety to the stimulus that you're trying to provide. So number one, we said, was changing grip, changing positions. You can change, for example, changing positions could be something as simple as like seated lateral raises versus standing lateral raises. When you stand, you have a little more leeway to kind of use your body to help you cheat. When you're sitting, it takes away a lot of hip momentum and a lot of hip movement, so it actually makes it stricter. So if you start and you try to get the best you can at sitting lateral raises, you can then go into standing lateral raises and you'll often be able to perform a couple extra reps even with the same weight load. So changing positions, changing grip, you have adding intensity techniques. You can also play around with what's called isometrics and slow descentrics. Isometrics is actually pausing the movement. Commonly, you'll pause in an area related to a weak point. In most exercises, that's when the muscles peak contraction. Now, there's a crap ton of exceptions from that. But in general, if you're doing like a bicep curl, you can pause in the middle of the range of motion every single curl. I would actually pause on the way down. So you would curl all the way up, go halfway down and stop for 1, 2, 3. Then go the rest of the way down, all the way up, start going down and pause in the middle. 1, 2, 3. Go the rest of the way down, come all the way up. By adding those isometrics, by adding those pauses, you're increasing time under tension. You're increasing the stress load placed into the muscle. So that's an awesome kind of technique that works really well. You can also do what's called slow descentrics, is when the working muscle is stretching under the weight load. So if you think of like chest presses, this would be on the way down, is the chest muscle stretching under weight load versus when it's contracting to push the weight away. So when the muscle, the working muscle, the targeted muscle, is stretching under weight load, you can just move slower. So again, if you think of a bicep curl, on the way down, try to take 5 seconds to go down, but only 1 or 2 seconds to come up. So you would come up, 1, 2, then on the way down, you would go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you'd be at extension. Then you'd come back up, 1, 2, and then go 5 seconds again on the way down. Again, that increases time under tension. It allows you to increase the stress load into the muscles. And all of these you can hear is we're keeping the same exercise, the same basic movement. We're just being able to kind of change the way the stimulus feels to the body. Another option you have is to take the exercises you already do, but kind of flip them around and put them in a different order. I've done this for clients before as a way to play around with what's called a pre-exhaust concept. So I had one client, we would do upper body workouts. He would do a chest press with a back row as like a superset to start his workout. And then to simplify things, I'm just going to shorten it up a little bit, is then he would do a like circuit where he'd do a lateral raise, a bicep exercise, and a tricep exercise. So maybe he'd be like, do dumbbell lateral raises into dumbbell bicep curls into dumbbell skull crushers. So he'd do the chest and back, and then he'd do shoulders, biceps, and tries. Then the next workout, he would actually do his shoulders, biceps, and tries first, and then he would do the chest and back. What that did was it weakened the arms for the chest and back exercise, so therefore it made him have to recruit more from his chest and back out of those movements. It made him weaker. He wasn't able to lift as much as he normally would, but it was awesome in the sense that it created the different degree of stimulus. So it's great that something as simple as just switching the order of your exercises can help you create that change of stimulus that you're looking for. The last thing we'll cover is you can change the frequency of your movements. Frequency of your training and your exercises and your workouts. So you might have somebody who works out 3 times a week, and maybe they do, maybe they do upper body, lower body, upper body, something like that. Well, you can change it to just do full body 3 times a week. So now all of a sudden those muscles that were only getting hit once or twice a week are now getting hit three times a week. I'll also often change as well workout order for people who have struggling body parts, say such as like they can't get their chest to grow. We'll train their chest 2 days in a row, even 3 days in a row. And then we'll cover the other body parts and the other workouts. But that's a great way to increase the stress load into the chest because the chest isn't fully recovered from the previous workout. So you dig a deeper hole, you get even more stress load into the chest, and the body has to respond even greater than to address that stress load. So those are all great ways that you can create variety without losing effectiveness, without losing what it is that you're doing. You don't have to switch to those stupid exercises you see the Instagram gurus do. Stay with what you know works, but create changes within that. Awesome. Okay, so thank you for enduring all my little weird side rants at the beginning of this podcast. Hopefully we got eventually to something that was useful. So thank you for listening. Just thank you. If you have any questions at all about this information, if you'd want some help in evaluating what you currently do, just email us at brutalirongym@gmail.com. Include your current training program and what your struggles are. If you're struggling to find variety, just tell me that, and then I'll give you some suggestions based on what today's podcast was. Better yet, why don't you try to do the changes and then send me what changes you meant and have me double check it for you, okay? That would be even better. So write down what you used to do, write down what you're thinking about doing now, and then ask me what I think about that. And I'll tell you, hey, that's a freaking awesome idea. Good job. So if you want any help, I'm always here. I'm always happy to help. I sincerely appreciate you listening to the podcast, and I want to make sure that you get in return some kind of benefit. So thank you for trusting in me to listen to my podcast, and I want to make sure that you get something for it. So always reach out to us if you ever need anything. Our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. Great. Well, if you like today's podcast, click like. If you think it's helpful, please share it with anybody and everybody. The more people we share the podcast with, the more people we can help. So that's pretty awesome. Then if you like the information we present in our podcast, you can find more on our social media channels on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube under the name Brutal Iron Gym. If you have any questions, feedback, suggestions, if there's ever anything you need, email us at brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.